Al Sermon is a contributing writer for The Guardian. While this publication is out of the United Kingdom across the pond, Alice has spent much of her life in Wisconsin. Today, I'm looking forward to learning more about what she's seeing, what she's hearing, as she's putting on hundreds and hundreds of miles traveling across this pivotal battleground state.
When Ben Franklin was leaving Constitution Hall, he was asked if the founders had decided to have a republic or an autocracy, and he said, "We have a republic if we can keep it."
Alice, thanks so much for joining us, and more so for the great reporting you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me.
So how did you decide to land in a career of journalism? It's obviously been a rocky road in recent years for this industry and in our country. And we could have a whole discussion about the health of our democracy and the decline of local journalism, but you're doing great work. And what drew you to it?
Yeah. So I did some reporting in college. I worked for the student newspaper, and I left school thinking, like, this is the only thing that I can do. And not because I'm necessarily great at it, but because I just couldn't really see myself holding down any other kind of job. I'm like decent at writing. I like talking to people and, you know, find myself getting in like little niche internet rabbit holes, even when I'm not reporting. So I was like, kind of really felt like I did want a career in journalism, but had no idea how to get into it. And so ended up working in the restaurant industry for a couple of years. And after, I think I'd been in this one job for like a year, and, you know, we decided we wanted to unionize, didn't really know what that meant. And me and my coworkers ended up working with people in the labor movement in Madison, Wisconsin, which is where I'm from. And so it was like sort of through this union campaign that I was introduced to labor organizers and ended up writing about labor, basically, like as a freelancer while also just working non-journalism jobs. So it was through that avenue that I got into reporting and, you know, ended up writing as a freelancer and then on some investigative grants about labor and politics, mostly in Wisconsin. Ended up working in Florida really briefly covering healthcare, but also with a focus on labor. And yeah, after like a sort of circuitous path through media, and I guess kind of there are a lot of different paths into journalism, but ended up working part-time at The Guardian, which has turned into a full-time role for the election year, covering voting rights and democracy issues back in Wisconsin. So yeah, it's a little bit of a circuitous path, but it's really gratifying to be back in my home state doing this type of reporting.
But the best is yet to come, and certainly it's going to be a newsworthy 50-some days to go. So you're born and raised in Wisconsin?
I wasn't born in Wisconsin, but I grew up in Wisconsin. And my mom's from Wisconsin, my dad's from Chicago, and I have lived here since I was like 1 year old. So
what do you attribute? Keep Our Republic's doing a lot of work in Wisconsin. I'm not from Wisconsin, but it's just fascinating how year after year, Wisconsin remains arguably the most purple state, most evenly divided state in the union. So what do you attribute that to?
Oh, that's a good question. I honestly don't even know if I'm going to be able to answer that question, Aria. I like wish I could give you a breakdown of the political leanings of, you know, groups in different parts of the state, but I think it's really complicated.
It's just kind of in the, you just take it for granted that every 2 years, every 4 years, there's going to be lots and lots of ads on the television and politicians doing rallies.
I think I read somewhere recently that Wisconsin, that the population of Wisconsin is about a 50th of the total population of the US. So I think, you know, we're not necessarily representative of the US in every way, but just like considering the number of voters in Wisconsin versus the disproportionate impact that elections in Wisconsin have, I think that's something that I think about more. Like Wisconsin realistically shouldn't necessarily be all of this focus on Wisconsin, considering like we're one of 50. It doesn't make sense that how we vote can determine an election and you know, what radio stations people are listening to could, you know, 2,000 people are listening to, or in 2020, 20,000 people's votes could, you know, turn an election.
But An international publication out of the United Kingdom has decided to invest money in a great professional such as yourself to unpackage these themes and what's on the mind of Wisconsinites. So, to the extent you can speak about it, I mean, what talk about the Guardian's work in this democracy space and why they decided to plant a flag, so to speak, aka hire you full time in Wisconsin.
So for 2024, The Guardian is, it, we have a democracy team within the politics team that is focused on voting rights and threats to democracy, and it, which have become more broad since Trump and his allies tried to overturn the 2020 election. And Wisconsin is not, you know, we're not the only state with a sort of movement of people who reject the results of the 2020 election, but as a swing state, that movement and its sort of outsized impact on politics and on elections administration, even in the state, is really important and is something that I've been focusing on in my reporting. And I'm happy to get into like some of the specifics if you're interested. Otherwise, we can stay
I
zoomed out.
think listeners would be interested. So let's unpackage as you take a look at the last year and pass this off in prologue, some of your reporting about these themes. You've done reporting from under the state capitol dome, you've done reporting from county government, and then, in my opinion, the most exciting reporting is just everyday Wisconsinites in different corners of the state. So maybe provide listeners a little perspective on why don't we just take these one at a time? Why don't we start with just kind of somewhere in Wisconsin, everyday Wisconsin voters, what's on their minds, their thoughts about what happened in 2020 and election administration?
I think to start, it's helpful to look at some of the national groups and figures that were promoting misinformation in the weeks and months following the 2020 election. And, you know, that ranges from the former president of the United States to, you know, popular media figures to allies of the former president who ended up developing their own groups that are focused on elections and election administration. So it's rather than sort of focusing, I mean, I think it's incredibly important to understand why people are interested in the in these messages, but I also sort of want to like if we're talking about blame, like look at the groups and figures who, you know, maybe standed to gain personally from a second Trump term, even though he didn't win it in 2020. And there are a handful of groups in Wisconsin that I think have really bought into that message and are also, for example, we have a group called North of 29, which is one of a constellation of groups that are really focused on, even at the end of Biden's first term in office, are still really focused on, you know, alleged irregularities in the 2020 election. And are connected with Mike Lindell's network. Mike Lindell founded this company called MyPillow and ended up being like a big figure in the election denier movement and now has his own like television channel. I think it may be online only, but he has a decent sized platform from which he, you know, promotes mis and disinformation about elections and also sort of, you know, helps organize people around issues like hand counting votes, which is something that it's not a good way to tally an election. Human error is really, really hard to overcome. And in a state with so many voters and in a state with big cities, it would be almost impossible and actually illegal in the state of Wisconsin to actually hand count votes. But you have this movement, a local movement, to adopt hand counting, which was sort of generated by this Mike Lindell network. So that's something that's happening, but beyond that particular type of organizing, there's also just a widespread mistrust of election outcomes in the state, which has spurred changes to how election administration actually happens. And even though, you know, I haven't seen the polling, but I know a majority of people trusted the outcome of the 2020 election, but enough didn't, that there's actually sort of local support for changes that make it to election administration that make it harder to vote or restrict voting. And we can get into that too. But anyway, it's kind of a complicated landscape, I think, politically for voting and elections in Wisconsin.
And we should mention that Mr. Lindell is from next door in Minnesota. So I imagine that he's paid particular attention to Wisconsin and election administration. So talk about the county infrastructure in Wisconsin, the role of the clerks, and what, if anything, has changed since lessons learned from 2020.
Yeah, Wisconsin elections administration is incredibly decentralized. We have more than 1,800 municipal and county clerks across the state who have some discretion in how they run elections locally. So that's an important thing in understanding how elections work in Wisconsin. We also have a bipartisan elections commission that sets guidances for those clerks to adopt, but it's kind of up to those clerks and how they adopt them. And it's up to those clerks to, you know, be keeping track of what the elections commission is doing and to implement those rules. So since 2020, there have been a lot of changes to how elections law is implemented in the state. And a lot of those changes and a lot of the kind of public discourse around those changes has been driven by doubts about the 2020 election. Just to give an example of the type of administrative rule change or guidance change that has been, I think, kind of challenging for clerks who have a lot on their plate already to keep up with. In 2016, the Elections Commission, which again is the statewide, or the elections authority in the state, issued a guidance that absentee ballots, in Wisconsin, if you submit an absentee ballot, you're required to also have a witness signature along with that absentee ballot. And in addition to the signature, the witness includes their own home address. And in 2016, the Elections Commission issued a guidance that absentee ballot witnesses must contain like a street number, street name, and their municipality for the certificate to be counted. And so when there were small errors in the address of the ballot, absentee ballot witness, clerks would fix them. Basically, if almost all of the information was there, but let's say there was a misspelling in a street name, in order for that ballot to be counted, clerks would either fix the error or verify that that was a street name and then count the ballot so that that person's vote wasn't
sure passed. If they forgot to write drive or avenue or what have you.
Right. Or added, you know, an extra S in the spelling of the street name. So it's really, really minor errors. And this became a point of contention after 2020, when suddenly there was just a hyper focus on the way that elections administrators were doing their jobs. And in 2022, a judge ruled that clerks can't do that anymore. This was right before the midterms. And so this is the first sort of change to this very, very specific guidance, but could potentially, you know, result in lots and lots of people's votes being tossed on extremely technical grounds. And the most recent update is that a judge found in January of this year that clerks actually can, if they're able to, you know, identify the address correctly, they can accept a ballot, even if it has really small errors in the witness section of the ballot. So I know this is super technical, but I think it illustrates just how much confusion, you know, public doubts about elections administration can create in the actual election administration process. There's a reporter with the Cap Times in Wisconsin who did a really fantastic report on how that particular back and forth was impacting elections clerks. And you know, it's confusing, basically, the outcome of this type of back and forth over the minutiae of counting ballots can make it harder for administrators to do their job and actually probably sow doubt in the process itself for voters as well. So that's just one
sense
example.
Of how many percentage wise, how many Wisconsinites generally use mail voting?
I mean, it was widespread. The use of absentee ballots was widespread during the 2020 election because of, you know, fears of catching or spreading COVID. And So in addition to voting absentee, we were using drop boxes where people could drop off their absentee ballots or their ballots, in advance of the election, making it a little bit easier to vote too. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court found that those are illegal, and so we haven't used them since. And that's also being challenged. So that's another example. The unmanned ballot drop boxes are another example of this contested voting policy that's driven in part by fears that, the Elections Administration process could be corrupted in some way that came out of 2020.
Okay, so as we wind down, then what, if anything, is the legislature and the governor done since 2020? And remind folks the composition of the legislature, and it's a Democratic governor and Tony Evers.
The Republicans have strong majorities in both houses of the state legislature, and the governor is a Democrat. So we have divided government in Wisconsin. So, I mean, just to give you the most recent example and the one that you had mentioned earlier, the Wisconsin Assembly approved a bipartisan measure to require ads using AI to like camp video political campaign ads using AI to include a disclaimer that AI was used in making that ad, which will be really important in mitigating confusion that could be caused by the use of deep fakes and which are convincing video representations of things that did not happen.
So Democrats and Republicans in the legislature agreed on, dare I say, that band-aid?
Yeah, they did. I don't know. We don't have to get into redistricting. I think that it's likely that this type of bipartisan legislation could be more normal in Wisconsin, given the changing legislative maps.
So with all the partisanship, with Republican control and Democratic potential vetoes from the governor, are there other examples in recent years that that there has been some sort of movement around election administration from the legislature?
Yes. So this there's a really weird example that came up recently. This is another really very recent example of a bill that actually is not going to make its way through the state house, but a bill that would have allowed clerks to start processing absentee ballots a day ahead of the elections, which would have sped up the vote count and potentially avoided the scenario where like lots of absentee ballots are being processed later and, surprising voters, taking voters by surprise during election night or in the, wee hours of the morning after election day. The idea is that allowing clerks to process those ballots could prevent some of that last minute anxiety and that. Unfortunately, well, I would say unfortunately, but that legislation died in the state Senate.
It's very similar to Pennsylvania,
Yeah.
where they're not able to physically open up the envelopes and lay them flat and begin that whole process until the morning of election day, which inevitably then means a very long night, if not into Wednesday and heaven forbid Thursday, that we're still sorting through all this.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question because I understand why, we're used to seeing elections results on election night. And so when that doesn't happen, it's confusing. But in 2020, it was in part because people were voting absentee in large numbers. And, question that I have that maybe is totally irrelevant is like, do we need the election results really, really fast? And I think it's helpful to the public to have the results in a timely manner, but it's also obviously really important for clerks to be able to do their job at their pace. So yeah, that's an interesting one.
But I think as Americans, I'm a patriot, but I don't think we're the most patient people.
No,
We
I don't think so.
invented ATM machines and other technology that expedites everything. So, well, Alice, you've been very generous with your time. What I always ask folks, the show's called If We Can Keep It. It's a reference to Ben Franklin and his thoughts after the Constitutional Convention when posed with the question, what type of government? He said, a republic, if we can keep it. So With all this in mind, everything you've seen from your perch in Madison, Wisconsin, are you optimistic about this election cycle and the future of our democracy, or dare I say, you're pessimistic?
I kind of swing back and forth on this. I think I don't want to boil this question down to just the candidates who are on the ballot. So just looking, I guess, instead at people view elections and the lack of trust in elections. And I feel a little pessimistic. I think I feel a little pessimistic. I am heartened to know that there are groups like yours that are trying to combat misinformation and engage people in the civic process in a bipartisan manner. But polarization is really bad. People really don't have any trust in the electoral process, and or a lot of people don't have trust in the electoral process. I mean, there's elections administrators across the country are doing active shooter drills because concerns about election day violence are present and very real. So, it's hard to be super optimistic, but I, like I said, I am heartened to know that like there are people who are also very concerned about this, including, sources that I know who were not very plugged into politics until the last several years. So I think we have a lot to overcome collectively.
Alice, thanks very much for your time, your perspective, and all the miles you're putting on traveling Wisconsin highways and byways.
Thank you so much, Ari.